Hello, and welcome to the Brandcast. I'm your host, Chris, and here today with Season 3, Episode Number 6, on Saturday, August the 4th, 2017, my guest today, Mr. Paul Grand. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris.
I've been looking forward to this one. I told Josh that I was gonna just retire right at the top, but then he booked Sarah Jean Anderson for next week. So
dude, you gotta go for that.
Yeah,
like you can't just go out on me, because that would just be like, okay, like what was he had like three seasons of it was great, and then he got like this weird dude who did silly voices, and then he just stopped. Like, it must have just done something to him inside. Couldn't take it anymore.
I like to start out each episode going over the mission statement for the show. So the purpose of the Brandcast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations, which are two-sided, as Amy Gascon pointed out. Otherwise, I'm not allowed to use the word conversations.
Doesn't that, like, imply two-sidedness, though? I mean, otherwise, it's just a monologue.
Yeah, but then we got into the interview part, and she asked me a question, and there was some contention there.
I see.
So now it's more conversational.
Yeah, Amy's pretty sharp, so.
Yeah. And then I have two goals for the show, the first of which is to post one new episode weekly, which has been happening, mostly. And then to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content. That is the second goal.
Does your guests count as that one person whose day you've made better?
Absolutely.
Because, like, this is pretty cool.
Oh, all right. Checking it off.
Done. And well, then that was fun. I'll see you later.
The other goal will probably happen tomorrow. Getting into the interview portion of the show, Paul, what is your favorite color?
Red.
Is there a particular shade of red?
Mazda RX-8 red, or is it Soul Red Metallic?
Soul, like S-E-O-U-L?
S-O-U-L, I think. Although it could also mean, or it could probably be S-O-L-E.
Like,
but I'm
Louis
pretty
Vuitton
sure.
Shoe? Soul red?
Or like Soleil, maybe? Like the fish? I don't know what color those are. They might come in red. But no, I've always liked red, and I always thought it was cool that, like, in any drawing or photograph of a rainbow, red was always on top. It was always first. I'm like, yeah, red's number one.
Hmm.
All other colors are greater numbers or more.
If you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
I'm betting a lot of people, and by a lot I mean like the people who are listening here, are probably going to expect me to say penguin. I'm going to say penguin. Because, like, if you think about it, like, what animal, like, nobody has any beef with penguins. There might be some, like, researchers out there in the Arctic. God damn it, penguins came through here, pooped all... They knocked over the antenna again. But for the most part, like, Bob and Tom and Joe and Darlene Consumer here in West Michigan, what do penguins cause? No damage, no fights. They're just, like, the kind of pudgy and huggable. And I respect that in an animal.
Yeah, they just want to breed and...
Well, don't we all, though? No, well, okay, except for me. I don't really want to breed. But if I did, like my offspring, I would like them to be huggable and pudgy.
Yeah. But probably not raised in Antarctica.
Depends on how good they are. Like, okay, if you eat all your vegetables, you can come home to a temperate climate. Until then, though, it's you and the glaciers, boyo.
Ooh. I've been watching Planet Earth 2.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Really, really good.
I've seen Planet Earth and Life.
Both fantastic. there's a ton more. Madagascar, Africa, Frozen Planet.
No. I think it was either Life or Planet Earth did a bit about Madagascar where you see the baobab trees.
Ooh.
They look sort of alien. They got these big chunky trunks and like way at the top there's this little of leaves. They're the weirdest. It's Madagascar. Oh, Madagascar.
It's a very Susian country.
Yeah, exactly.
There was a part in Planet Earth 2 about penguins and they showed like the brutality of trying to get into and out of the ocean safely. And
oh, okay. Penguin on penguin brutality. I'm like, Chris, don't. No, stop. Stop. Stop, Chris. But yeah, I get it. It's like, that's where they're most vulnerable to, I don't know, like leopard seals and
Oarsmen. Like jumping off a cliff to get into the ocean. And if they timed it wrong with the giant waves, they would just get
oh, really?
Smashed.
Just like...
Yeah. And getting back out, too, they have to like ride the top of the wave and then hop out at the right time. Otherwise, they just get blasted.
It's pretty splat up against the side of the cliff. No, it's funny. I'm not going to try to justify that in any way. I'm just horrible.
It was kind of comedic in like a physical comedy sense until you think about the birds are just getting like smashed to death.
Well, except for the death bit, it's hilarious.
If it was a cartoon, they look pretty cartoonish.
Yeah,
so.
And they'd, if you muted the sound and gave it a doink, boink noise, like
if you don't think about any of the externalities of the clip that you're watching, then it is hilarious. Like most things in life. What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
Let's see. If it wasn't Bill Cosby, and that's not cool anymore, but like, and he's still funny, but now you listen to his stuff, it's like, ha! Oh, man. So we'll go with a comedian named Steve Geyer, a Christian comedian, because back in the day, Christian stuff was the only thing I was allowed to listen to. Hmm. I didn't know about ideas until I was like in my teens.
Did he make, were his bits about Jesus and the apostles, or
no? Surprisingly, not. That was maybe that's why I liked him so much, because he actually said that his tagline, but one of the things that stuck out was he's like, you know, when you're laughing, your defenses are down. You're like, and I can go, Jesus loves you, and you go, and your defenses are down, and then you, I want to know more. Yeah, I thought you would.
Trying to incept people with psychological manipulation.
Yeah, yeah, but for Jesus.
Oh, that's okay.
So it's okay then.
Have you seen the movie Year One?
Mm-mm.
With Jack Black and Michael Cera? It's got a lot of biblical stuff in it. It's very funny, I think.
Like, Jack Black gets a lot of crap for not being all that funny. Like, but, I mean... Oh, excuse me. Breakfast stout. But the... Oh, was it School of Rock? It's almost like an embarrassing thing to say that you like that movie. So it's full of kids and it's like a musical. No. But I thought it was inexplicably hilarious. But to answer your question, no, I've not seen Day One.
I would recommend it. It didn't get well reviewed, but I thought it was quite hilarious.
You know what? Neither did Mystery Men, and I thought that movie was hilarious.
Yeah.
It's got Tom Waits in it.
And Ben Stiller and William H. Macy and...
Who was an awesome character in that movie. Just, I shovel well. I shovel very well. He delivers it so earnestly, but he's saying the dumbest thing. It's great.
Yeah, tons of great actors in that film. Year One also. A lot of good cameos and like very strong characters that are only there for a short period of time, played by very talented actors.
Hmm. Yep, I will have to check that out. I've got a list of movies that I've been told to see, and I'm slowly getting through them. I keep them in my OneNote on my telephone.
Ooh. It must be a Windows phone then.
No.
What?
I know. This is...
What happened?
It's a long story. It was a falling out. It was a love story. But the love was unrequited, as love often is.
Does that mean not reciprocated?
I think so. I'm not really sure. It's one of those... It was a tale of unrequited love. And I'm like, I never looked that up to find out what... I'm like, yeah, unrequited. That probably means something bad because that guy's voice sounds scary. But yeah, they basically, it was, it's anybody who's familiar with Microsoft, basically, you know, kind of this story already. Hey, here's our product. It's pretty good. And you go, oh, okay, that's nice. I'll give it a try. And they go, oh, good. You're using our product? And like, yeah, yeah. What else you got for me? Like, do you have, is it going to do all the stuff that you told me it was going to do? And they're like, no. And then you're sort of like, but it will eventually, right? And they're like, maybe. And you're like, well, when? And they're like, haha, just kidding, no.
Oh.
And then they flip you off and they walk away. And you're like, well, at least it was only a $30 phone.
Yeah. There's a lot they can be forgiven at that price point.
Pretty much. I mean, like, you can unrequite a lot of stuff for $30.
Yeah, you can. Even on a Friday.
I'm so smart.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
That I probably have Amy Gaskin to thank for that. Amy and Will.
Oltman?
Yep, Will Oltman, the one and only. Also Amy, the one and only her too. She's only one Amy. But I remember being at Will's place, like at a bonfire, and someone, it was either Amy or Will's, like, yeah, I've been trying to get Paul to try improv. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can't because of depression. And Amy's like, why? Like, and at the time, I was like, oh, that's rude. But I'm also thinking, like, no, that's actually a really good question because why indeed? Other than that it terrifies me, it still does.
Hmm.
Like, every time I... Like, for days leading up... Hell, I was nervous about this. I took a propranolol before I came here for this.
A what?
It's like an anti-anxiety type thing. Hmm. It basically just lowers your blood pressure.
Oh.
It, to keep your adrenal system from going nuts. Like, my fight or flight? Anyway, my fighty-flighty...
FRF?
Yeah. It's been sort of, like, dumbed down a bit. So, like, if a... Like an ogre busted through your wall. I was like, I'll eat your face. Like, you'd probably bolt, but I'd be like, ogre. And then he'd kill me because I'm just not adrenal right now. But no, Amy and Will were the ones who started a sketch writing club.
Mm-hmm.
And Will's like, hey, you should join this. He'd asked me to join improv stuff before. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. And so he's like, okay, how about this? You know, it's just a writing thing. We get together, we write stuff, we talk about it, we read it around the table, and that's it. I said, oh, I can handle that, I think. Turns out writing for the stage, funnily, writing funny stuff for the stage is difficult. Hmm. Like, way more difficult than I thought it was. And I wanted to give up, but I was like, no, I will find a way to shoehorn my style into something that makes a decent stage performance. And I sweated and I crafted and I drafted and I threw away stuff and I crumpled balls of paper up, and there was a whole montage of that, and I still came up with something that was garbage, but I tried, and that was the important part. And the surprise was that we had to perform these things. So it was the first time I was ever on stage. They're like, okay, well, that's great, we've got, each of us have like 4 or 5 decent sketches, think of which one you want to perform. I'm like, wait a minute, what? You shouldn't perform? I didn't think we could. She's like, no, it'll be fine. You just pick one and perform it. I'm like, oh.
Just do it.
Okay. And I just did it. And it was uncomfortable to watch the video recording that, I forget who recorded it, but it was probably my dad. I was just, you could barely hear me, and I was probably all sweaty.
And that was your first... performance?
Yep, first time I'd ever been on stage doing anything.
Nice.
Except, well, no. Back in high school, someone asked me, the drama teacher asked me to be a part of a play she wrote. It was a Little House on the Prairie fanfic, basically.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was as bad as you're all imagining it to be.
Was Michael Landon there?
No, he would have improved it. That's how bad it was. But... yeah, she's like, you get to play Doc, whoever. And I quit the first day because I just couldn't talk loud enough.
Hmm.
I'm like, well, Charles, it looks like a bunion, or whatever my line was. And she's like, louder. Well, Charles, it looks like a bunion. Pretty soon I'm just screaming the line. She's like, that's not loud enough. I'm like, if I yell any louder, it's not going to sound like I'm actually talking. Huh. She's like, that's what performance is all about. And I just quit.
Let's talk about Beer City Improv.
Yay!
There's been a little confusion over this prompt. Basically, what I'm asking is for you to talk about the topic that I introduced at that point, and then maybe I'll participate. So please talk about Beer City Improv, but I like the way Let's Talk About sounds
okay.
Better.
Let's do that. Beer City Improv began about 2 years ago, maybe three. I'm really bad with time. And it was the brainchild of Aaron Fram, who has since moved to Albany. And he said unto the people, I wish to create an improv troupe that is coached, where after each performance, after each practice, I will review the notes that I take during said performance or practice, and this will help you all be better improvisers. And we will focus on a form called The Herald. And I was like, Aaron, that sounds wonderful. I'd like to be a part of that. And because, like, that's one of the things that I really liked about basically any kind of performance was the feedback. Negative, positive, I like it all. Like, because I've yet to hear negative feedback that I didn't go, oh, yeah, you're right. That was kind of, like, I haven't, maybe it's just because I'm self-deprecating, but I haven't disagreed with any negative feedback that I've heard yet. And so our first practice came, and Aaron led us through describing what a herald was. We performed one.
What is a herald?
It's a three-beat kind of structure. Well, I guess maybe it's a nine-beat structure. You start out, everybody gets out on stage and does some stuff together, a group game. And you got things like where everybody just runs around making noises, and then the noises slowly morph into words or other noises and actions, and then you can do one where everybody's just sort of monologuing, telling a shared story, and jumping in after someone else sets up a bit, and then someone else comes in and continues the story. And all this is to generate a bunch of ideas for your first three scenes, and they're usually like two-person scenes. So scene 1A, two people come out and do something that they pulled from one of the opening bits. And another group of two people for 1B come out and they do a scene, and then 1C, and then a kind of a palate cleanser group game. And I'm not clear if that has to be based on any of the stuff that happened previously or if it comes straight from the suggestion. I didn't pay that much attention, I guess. I didn't read the book by Del Close. Then there's another set of three scenes, and each of those, like 2A, 2B, and 2C, are derived from 1A, 1B, and 1C. They're either a jump in time or mapping the game where it's like, okay, these two people spoke in nonsense. Now we're going to have a scene where people speak in nonsense, but in a totally different setup. Kind of that kind of game. Then there was one that uses a word. I can't think of it. It's like a fancy kind of like a smart person word, like a Jeopardy word.
You know the letter it started with?
No, I'm not. No. Crap. But it was, it's sort of like it's another derivative kind of pulling the essence of 1A out and turning it into another thing using that same essence. And then another group game after the second series of three scenes come by. And the second series is a little shorter, a little quicker, a little faster. Then another group game, which is also a little bit faster than the first. And then we just sort of go into like overdrive mode where it's a bunch of like a flurry of two people scenes. It's like if you had an idea that you wanted to throw into 1A or 1B and you couldn't do it because you forgot or you were sweating too much and you were too concerned about that, like you throw it into the run at the end, that series of rapid fire stuff. And then we close, like just we all say the word that was the suggestion that started us all off, which I forgot to mention. But that, in a nutshell, in a very long-winded nutshell, is the Herald.
Thank you. Let's talk about rapid delivery improv.
Let us do that. So yeah, that was the one that Will and Amy were in when I first met Amy. And that was the one that I ended up like, take the class. I'm like, okay, I'll take the class. And I paid for the class. It was like $150. And I was like, okay, my stinginess is now at war with my antisocialness.
You have to get your money's worth out of the class.
Yeah, I'm like, I already paid for it. I can't back out now or else I lose $150.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a lot. So I went, and Bart Sumner, the instructor, it was great because he basically didn't mince words when he thought you were doing it wrong. And, you know, it's like, is there really a wrong in improv? Well, kind of, especially if you're taking a class that's supposed to teach you the structure. Once you know a structure, then you can bend it and move it around and, disregard it altogether. But so that was my sort of intro to improv. Well, no, I take that back. My first time trying to do improv before I even took the BART class was with the Dark. But that's another story. That may be on your list.
It's actually the next topic.
All right. Well, I'll save that for the next topic. Rapid delivery. Going through the classes. A bunch of people in level one. It's really fun. Basic intro to improv. Just say yes. And then add information. Yes, and. We've all heard that before. If you've heard anything about improv. And then if you were good enough, like, at the end of the first level classes, like if Bart thought, he's like, hey, you know, you're doing really good. You seem to really like this. How would you like to take the second class? This is a little bit more intensive, a little bit more work. You know, they assume you know the basics. And if you're really, you know, if you really take to it after the second level class, then you get invited to join rapid delivery, which wasn't really my dream because I didn't think I'd have any chance at getting there. So I'm like, I was just telling myself, like, I don't want those grapes anyway, like that fox.
And parable of the sour grapes.
Yep. Like, you know what? It's probably like, you have to work. Like, there's probably homework or whatever. Like, and Bart probably yells at you or something. I don't know. Like, I don't want to do that. And after I failed to make it onto the troop the first time through level two, I was like, you know what? I actually think I would like to do that. They seem to have a lot of fun. And that's kind of the point. Like, if you see an improv troupe that doesn't look like they're having fun on stage, you're probably not having fun as an audience member. But RDI actually made it look fun. Like, it looks like those people are having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do it. I'm going to try level two again. And if I don't make it that time, well, then I guess it wasn't meant to be. But and yeah, I got on the second time through. Bart sent me an email. He's like, I'm probably going to regret this, but... I'll have you start practicing with the troupe, and we'll see how that goes. We'll put you in shows. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And as soon as I got on RDI, a bunch of people quit, left, moved away. The troupe got smaller. Some scheduling stuff happened with the level two class, and then it kind of folded, unfortunately. Like, I'm hoping it comes back. Because if it comes back in 2018, like, I'll be part of that. I'd love to be.
I'm hoping it comes back also. I've enjoyed all the shows that I've been to.
Yep, you've been to, like, you're one of our, like, best audience members. I'm not like you're better than everybody else, but you're, like, most often present. That and my mom and dad. I mean, mostly my mom, or mostly my dad.
I see him at a lot of comedy shows.
It's great. They're like, our stupid son is doing a thing. Should we go? I guess. And they seem to actually enjoy it, though, so bless their hearts.
Thank you, Paul's dad, for supporting the community. And Paul.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Shout out to my mom and dad and to Amanda Stevenson, who's been to, like, the vast majority of all my shows. And even if I thought I did terrible, she was always there. No, you did great. And she's wonderful.
She is. Let's talk about With the Dark.
With the Dark is like, man, how to... Yeah, I'll play favorites. With the Dark's probably my favorite. In part because I'm still like a nervous, sweaty guy. And with the Dark, they turn off all the lights so nobody sees me. So that takes space work entirely out of the equation. It takes the audience staring at you out of the equation. I'm like, I know they're still staring at me. I can feel their eyes.
I have excellent night vision.
Yeah, and that's an, darn it, Chris. It's another bit where it's like sometimes like it doesn't get very dark in there. I'm like, they can still see us because I can see them. But yeah, that was my first time doing improv was when Will said, hey, we need another person to do this. Here's what it is. It's like six people in the dark doing improv, sort of like it's a radio show. And we got a bunch of stuff on the table in front of us that we use to make sound effects. Does that sound like something you'd like to do? We just need another person. I was like, oh, okay, well, they need some backup. I can provide backup. And it was a lot of fun. And so he's like, yeah, if this is something you'd like to do like more often, you know, we perform at Comm every now and then. And like that first year we were doing it, we ended up going to the Kalamazoo Improv Festival. It drove all the way out there to be part of KIF. Do they call it KIF?
We call it
Griff, and then there's Detroit's Diff. I'm calling Kalamazoo's Kiff, like the Futurama character.
Amy's husband?
Yeah, the squishy frog guy.
Is he actually a bunch of flies, or was that like an evolution?
I think that was like his final form. How he ended up going back to like the squishy frog guy, I honestly don't remember. Ooh, Amy. I feel so... Ooh.
That's a great kiff. I saw on the Facebook there was a live feed of a cast reading of one of the Futurama episodes. That was really entertaining. They had almost everyone, just the Lena.
Who does kiff?
Leela.
Is it Billy West? Does he do him too? Or
I'm trying to remember.
I thought it was like LeVar Burton.
The guy that does Bender.
Oh, really? Joe DiMaggio? Maybe. Or for some reason, I was thinking it was the Reading Rainbow guy.
Lamar Burton,
I think.
Yeah. Maybe it was Billy West.
It could be. Billy West does a lot of voices on that show.
Yeah.
Welcome to Reading Rainbow. I'm Kiff. Oh, golly. Sometimes I read when I'm nervous.
Do you do any like professional voice work? Is it a hobby or?
The closest thing I've come to doing professional voice work was like another one of Will Altman's ventures. I forget the name of the sketch I was in, but it was for Last Retort.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I can't remember, but I had to deliver. Oh, it was the drone delivery one, where at the end I was just like, drone delivery, tomorrow is today, or something like that. I'm like, I had to sound professional. But I haven't actually done any, like, reading audiobooks. How do you know when you've become a professional voice actor? Like, if someone pays
you money for it, even once?
I almost got that. Joe Anderson asked me to do if it was Dolby Atmos, like a thing that he was contracted to do or something like that. And he's like, yeah, the Dolby people don't like the thing that I gave them. So here, you have a crack at it. And it turns out they didn't really like what I was doing either. But that if they had, I would have gotten paid for that. And that would have been pretty sweet.
Yeah.
If you call the extra, I don't know if I should say it here, probably not, but the place where I work, if you call the tech support line from the outside, you get like a phone tree, and I'm the voice of the phone tree.
Oh, you got paid for that, technically?
Technically, since I was on the clock when I made the recordings.
There you go.
So, oh my God, I didn't realize that.
You're now officially a professional voice actor.
Sweet. See, that just made my life even better. Thank you, Chris Nichols, for
helping you flesh out the resume a bit.
Yeah, I'm going to put that on there.
And you can put the podcast as like a special interest or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you as a reference.
Sure. I will have nothing but positive things to say.
Sweet. So yeah, we'll look out for that call from NASA.
Ooh. You're not a SpaceX man?
I don't know. Like, I guess it's like I don't trust corporations as much as I trust NASA. It's like, yeah, they're a government entity, and you don't really want to trust the government either, but it's like, still, I can vote them out. I don't know. I don't know if I can vote out a NASA person.
You could try.
Yeah, Capsule Command, I hate that guy. I'm going to vote, I'm totally going to vote Capcom out. Get a new guy, some fresh blood in there.
I thought maybe with your proclivity for Windows Phone, you might be a Blue Origin guy, but...
Yeah, well, I do like sticking up for the underdog, and I suppose in this case, SpaceX, and that's Elon Musk's thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
What's the other one? Jeff Bezos.
Blue Origin.
Blue, oh, okay. Dirt. Yep. Yeah, that guy. The reusable rockets, and that's some clever stuff them fellas are doing.
Oh, yeah. Very exciting. How awesome is it working with Will Altman?
It's pretty darn awesome, I'm not going to lie. I mean, some part of me is just jealous sometimes. It's like, he's got a full-time job where he does awesome design work, and he has time to do all these little side projects, and he's like, he's awesome at juggling. Where does Will have the time to do all this stuff? Like, how does he do it?
He doesn't sleep or something?
Yeah, he either doesn't sleep or he's a whiz. Oh my God, he's a wizard.
That seems that's like the most...
The beard. Yeah. Like, I don't know why I didn't see it sooner. He's a freaking wizard. That's how he manages all that. Like, or he just has, like, more energy than I do, which is... Yeah, that's possible.
Will Altman a wizard? You heard it here first.
That's my conspiracy theory, okay, you guys? Will Altman's a wizard. And the government's trying to control my mind through cheese.
And tap water.
Hillary Clinton. InfoWars.
Oh, man.
Those people crack me up. No, conspiracy theorists in general kind of crack me up because they assume that the people that they're accusing of all the conspiring have the same amount of free time that they do. And most of the time they don't. Like, I don't think the government's trying to do all that stuff because, one, they don't have the time, and two, they don't have the time or the competence to do what they want to do well. Like, they don't have the time to come up with, you know, secret dark energy ray guns that control people's minds and make your shoes disappear or whatever. Sorry, InfoWars, just nobody got time for that.
Yeah, sorry, Alex Jones. Burst your bubble. I guess might as well just pack it up and go home now.
Yep, shut down that website. Nobody's reading it. Actually, a disappointing number of people probably read it.
Millions.
Now I'm starting to feel sad.
Let's move on then.
Okay.
What other forms of comedy have you performed?
I tried stand-up a couple of times. Again, at Dog Story Theater. Oh, yeah, Dog Story Theater. If you're listening, I love you. Like, and the people who make it happen and all that stuff. But I love the building, too, because that's where they let me in there. And one time when nobody was looking, I hugged the building. It was warm because it was summer and the sun was hitting the bricks, and it was actually very nice. I still think about that hug. I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
Performing forms of comedy other than improv.
Yep, so I did stand up. The first time at Dog Story Theater, I did it where I prepared a couple of slides, and I did it about what it's like to go shopping as somebody with social anxiety, where it's another one of those conspiracy theory kind of things where I'm always afraid people are looking at me and judging me and thinking bad things about me, when in reality, they don't care. Like, yeah. Nobody's spending that amount of time analyzing what I'm doing at Walmart. They just don't care. They're like, I'm just here to get oil filters, just like you. I don't give a crap. So, and that actually went really well. I received some feedback from a friend of mine you've had on the show, Brandon Holstein, who wrote very nice things about my performance and, you know, he's another one of these people who's... Actually, every single person I know in the improv comedy scene here in GR has been the nicest, most supportive person ever. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a great community.
And then I tried stand-up again at Dog Story Theater, and that went over. It was a little bit better. It was a little bit not quite as good, because I didn't put as much effort into it, I think. It was sort of like another one of my old blog posts that I tried to turn into stand-up. And then the third time I tried it at like a Funny Girls thing at the end of one of the shows where they had people just come up and it's open mic time. And I tried to get up there and just wing it without preparing anything at all. And it was awful.
Oh no.
Nobody booed or anything because they're very nice and supportive, like I said earlier. But it was, yeah, definitely like, yep, nobody's laughing. And I don't blame them.
Hmm. That was only your third time, though.
Yeah, and they clapped when I was done, so they're like, yeah, good try. Which was very nice of them. And I also tried stand-up at Michigan Blood. It was like a... They had sort of a tie-in with the Grand Rapids Improv Festival, or... no, it was Laugh Fest. Laugh Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And I entertained... My goal was to entertain some donors who were there recovering from donating blood, and there were like two people there, and I basically read something that I wrote off a tablet that I brought. It was sad and terrible. And again, as Amanda is wont to do, told me I did wonderfully. She's like, you did great. I laughed. Like, yeah, you kind of like are supposed to though, because you love me. No, I thought you were funny. Again, thank you, Amanda. But I realized that was not a very good performance.
Thank you, Amanda. For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
I don't know. Well, I guess stand-up is probably one of my favorite things. Patton Oswalt, Louis C.K., Brian Regan, some of my favorites. I like Lewis Black too, and I like some of George Carlin's older stuff before he just turned into a ranty old man, which was funny in its own right, I guess. But
yeah, he got kind of cynical.
But I don't know. Like, I don't really watch a lot of sketch comedy. I remember watching Mad TV like 15, 16 years ago and thinking it was hilarious, in living color even before then. Never thought Saturday Night Live was all that funny, which is, you know, that's a, you know, that'll turn me into a pariah.
No, I agree. It has its moments, but the signal to noise ratio is not very good for me.
Yep. Sometimes a nugget of gold will float to the top and it's amazing.
It's like a piece of corn in a otherwise brown substance. I might be floating in a bowl of, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's like, do I really want to sift through this bowl of poo to get out the corn? And what am I going to do with this corn anyway? I'm not going to eat it. I guess I'll just enjoy it. Like, here it is. It's one non-poopy thing. But like other shows that are, you know, was it Parks and Rec? Another one that... The Office. People, you know, it's a very popular show, and I just can't do it. Maybe it's because I'm doing it wrong, and that's usually the way I assume. Like, if I don't like something or if something doesn't work out, I'm like, I must be doing this wrong. I must be watching The Office wrong. And I'll probably give it another try some other time.
What was it like attending Uncle Harold's Stove Touching College?
Oh yeah, I don't like to brag, but no, that was seriously one of the... It was back in the formative years of my life. My parents, and we were not rich. They wanted to send me to a place that they thought would prepare me for a real life, and they looked at what we had available in our price range, and it was schools where they taught you math and writing and science and stuff. Or then there was like seminary type things where they would teach you scriptures, and you know, sometimes they would cloister you if you wanted that. Like, Would you like to live on campus? Maybe be a monk? Like, you get a robe. Like, I couldn't be a nun. I wanted to. They wouldn't let me. But Uncle Harold's stove touch in college, that changed my life. Because up till then, like, I just touched all stoves. Like, they were, whether they were on or they were off, it didn't matter. I just touched all the stoves. And you know, you can only do that for so long. You can only touch stoves for so long before you end up touching the wrong stove.
Mm-hmm.
And it hurts. It hurts, man. I'm sorry.
Would you like a tissue?
I got my sleeve here.
Oh.
Uncle Harold was a gruff man. He was gruff. And basically his message was, don't touch no stove, boy. And I'd never heard anybody say it that clearly before. You know, I'd never heard it articulated in so few words. And that boy at the end, it was like he was talking just to me. And he was, because I was the only one there. It was in his garage. And he was just like, okay, now class is dismissed. And I went home that day, a changed man. I saw our stove, like, and I'd touched that stove so many times. Like, it's not even, like, in some cultures we'd be legally married now. But I went home and I didn't touch it. And my life was only uphill and only rainbows, ponies, and cinnamon-scented showers from then on. No, thank you, Uncle Harold. And thank you, Uncle Harold, stove touching college.
Thank you, Uncle Harold.
You're welcome, boy.
Ooh.
No, part of him lives on in me.
Literally?
Just his voice.
Oh. I wasn't sure if there was some sort of skin graft situation going on.
It's some sort of chimerism. Like sometimes when it's sunny out, like the sun hits just the right patch of shoulder, like sometimes I sing.
Ah, Harold.
What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
Well, we talked about Mystery Men earlier. That's one of them for sure. And I'm sure tons of people say it, but Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Just bits like, oh, it's only a model, when they're approaching the castle, or when the prince with the, oh, I don't know, kind of voice falls out the window, and it's in a swamp, and you hear, oh, and just this little noise. It was so stupid. I love that bit. And, you know, it's like, of course, the knights who say knee and the black knight, it's only a flesh wound. Yeah, that's funny too, but it's all those little extra stupid bits that I really like. Let's see, what was, you know what, Ice Age, the first Ice Age movie. I'm a sucker for computer animation. I still am, but I was way more back when it was less of a every other movie thing.
Yeah.
But I thought some of that stuff was hilarious. Ray Romano, whose show I didn't think particularly funny, and whose stand-up I didn't think was particularly funny, although it had its moments. That's a good movie. It really is a good movie, and it made me cry at the end, too. Like, when the hunter people get their baby back, and like they're about to stab the Ray Romano, and Ray Romano's like, no, in his Ray Romano voice, and handed him a baby instead. And then, yeah, it was very touching. I don't know. I don't have a lot of, like, you know, you say, oh, what are your influences or whatever? I'm awful at thinking of those outside of the local community here. Like, you know, who are your influences? I'm like, I guess like Will and Amy and Liz Hatfield and other folks from Rapid Delivery.
What are some of your all-time favorite television shows?
The Simpsons, for sure. I can still quote, I haven't watched it in a long time, which is a dumb thing. If it's your favorite show, how come you haven't watched it? Well, I haven't had the time, I guess. I can still quote lots of stuff from, say, season 8, Futurama. one of the like the first episode of Futurama, I'm like, oh, this show is going to take over from The Simpsons, and it's going to be hilarious. Like when like Bender's like, yeah, somebody's going to have to bend these bars. And Fry just lifts the grate up and they all go down. And he goes, ah. Then he reaches up after he crawls down the ladder and just twists the bars on the grate and. That's funny stuff to me. So, Futurama, Bob's Burgers, for, I guess, for a local show. Oh, can't forget Gravity Falls. Which, have you heard of Gravity Falls?
It's a Disney Channel cartoon.
Right, exactly.
The and that people who created it did something awesome beforehand. I can't remember what.
Alex Hirsch? I don't know. That name doesn't mean anything to me, except that I believe he has some sort of connection with Rick and Morty, which is a show that I've seen the first season of it. And there's been a couple of bits where I laughed out loud because it was really funny.
Yeah. You should watch the second season, and now the third season has just begun.
Does it get better in the second one?
It's continuously good.
Okay, yeah. Because
if you go back and rewatch them too, there's a lot of subtleties that you miss the first time through, and the second time through even.
Yeah, like in just to showcase some of the connection between Gravity Falls and Rick and Morty, there's one bit where there's a space-time portal that sucks in a bunch of debris off of Grunkle Stan's desk. Like a notepad, a pencil, and like a shoe or something like that goes flying into this portal and disappears forever and nobody ever thinks of it again. And one episode of Rick and Morty, those objects come flying out of a portal.
Oh, the same objects?
Yeah, same objects. And I think that's because Alex Hirsch has worked on both of the shows. But it's seriously a hilarious show. And like it's a Disney cartoon. It's a Disney Network show, and I don't know much about Disney, but or about the Disney Network. And I know some of their movies can be hilarious, but you know, to me, Disney is something that you grow out of when you're in your late teens, or at least that's sort of like the way I thought of it. Like, oh, really, the Disney Network, a cartoon from the Disney Network? I'm an adult, which isn't to say that I didn't even. I found Princess and the Frog funny, I'll admit it.
Is that a movie?
Yep, it's one of the Disney princess movies.
Oh.
And, you know, the reason I wanted to watch it was because there's a Firefly in there who's voiced by the same guy who does the voice of Bob the Goldfish on the Earthworm Jim cartoon.
There's a cartoon for Earthworm Jim?
There was, it only lasted two seasons. Oh. And Dan Castellaneta, a.k.a. Dan Castellaneta. A.K.A. the voice of Homer Simpson does Earthworm Jim.
Oh.
And I have it on, I think I have DVDs. If I don't have DVDs of the show, I have VHSs, so you're welcome to borrow that and a VCR.
Digital versatile discs?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of people think it's digital video disc, but it's actually versatile discs. Because you can.
Cleaves.
Yeah, I know, right? Freaking pedestrians. So yeah, watch Gravity Falls, you guys. It's a hilarious show. In part because there's a character on there named Grunkle Stan. He's your great uncle, so he's a grunkle. And he's like a con man, kind of drifter guy, runs a roadside attraction. Come see the fish that's half fish, half gopher. And it's so obviously just two taxidermied animals glued together. You can see the glue. He's just so terrible. Watch the show. It's funny.
What streaming shows are you currently watching?
You mean like Netflix and HBO and
Amazon Prime, YouTube,
okay.
Vimeo?
I haven't seen a lot of stuff off YouTube, but we just finished up Hulu, or not Hulu. It is Hulu. The
Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah, The Handmaid's Tale. Is it Handmaid or Handmaiden?
I don't know.
Handmaid, I think, yeah.
I don't like Hulu.
Yeah, I received access to the show through less straightforward means. But yeah, it's one of those shows that continually punches you in the gut with just how bleak and horrifying it is.
Oh.
But there are some funny bits, but mostly you're just like, ah. Okay, I can't watch another one. I want to. Like, I want to see what's coming next. I want to see how they get out of this pickle they're in. but it's just so dark. And so Handmaid's Tale, that was, I finished that up. It was good. I watched Breaking Bad through Netflix, which I really enjoyed. It was another one of those shows where it's just like, oh, that's terrible.
But so well made.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff in there where just like it's silence and you can see the camera just sort of wiggling a little bit like someone's holding on to it. And the two characters are sitting there staring at each other, not saying anything. I'm like, and the take will last a good minute or so. And it's just, okay, something should be happening now because I'm used to takes that only last 30 seconds. And my attention span isn't used to that kind of, I don't know, you call it realism? But it just, it's enough to make it like believable. It makes it believable and it makes you uncomfortable, which the show is very good at. Let's see, there was another thing, but I can't think of it. I can't remember it. Must not have been that important.
Hopefully. Who are some of your all-time favorite comedians?
Oh, I still think some of the bits that Steve Geyer did, and these are things that I listened to like back in the early 90s.
The 1990s?
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
Back in the 1900s?
Yep. Back in the previous millennium. Where he's talking about, he's like, my wife's trying to make me eat healthy. With manly cereals like Mueslix. It's like, Mueslix? And he just sort of goes off on this random tangent. Mueslix sounds like something you'd cough up, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you want some Mueslix? No thanks. Got some right here. Which, to however old I was back in the 90s, like in my 10s, was hilarious.
How much do you think Kellogg's was paying him?
He kind of mocked a lot of the cereal. Oh, no, grape. Oh, you know what? The Kellogg's people probably paid him pretty good because he went off and he mocked Grape Nuts.
Ooh.
He's like, Grape Nuts, what is it? It's not grapes, it's not nuts. It's pebbles and milk. Okay. You know, some dentist scraped it off his driveway and he's making a killing off of us. So, funny stuff back in the day. Currently, I guess my favorites would probably be Patton Oswalt and Brian Regan. Which are kind of polar opposites in terms of their content. I got a kick out of, oh crap, what was his name? The guy, he did a thing called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Does that sound familiar to you?
It does. But it's, is it cuck fantasy stuff? Boy, I might be thinking of something different.
That's probably something totally different. Let's see, My Girlfriend's. I'm gonna look it up here.
He is tapping on his pocket computer.
My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. What is it? Brandon Holstein was the guy who he introduced me to this character, or to this this comedian. Boy, that's not right at all.
He's scrolling.
Ah, Mike Birbiglia.
Oh. There we go. Yeah, Birbiglia.
Yep, he's hilarious, and even when he's not being funny, I'm still entertained, because he's telling a story, and I don't know if it's just his delivery, or the fact that it seems like he's actually telling you a real story from his life. But like, yeah, it's like listening to your to just a I don't know how to describe it. You'll have to listen to Birbiglia.
I think he had a new special out on Netflix just recently.
I would have to check that out because I watched some of his other stuff and I thought I could have swore there was one called My Boyfriend's or Girlfriend's Boyfriend.
That sounds but like a film.
Yeah, it's a movie, and I don't know if it's based off of his thing or not. But
have you seen his other movies? Sleepwalk with Me.
I have not.
On Netflix. Very good.
I will have to give that a try, too.
Don't Think Twice. Very, very good. Recently out on Netflix.
It's on Netflix now? Yeah, that was it is. Like, some folks were going to go see that in the theater, and I just missed going with them because I had other crap I had to do, but...
Yep. Very, very good. About improv comedy. Yeah. Highly recommend it.
Yep, definitely. I'm going to add that to my OneNote list.
There's a notepad and writing utensils over there if you want to create physical media. Yes.
I don't want to write on the mic table.
Josh appreciates that.
Big liar. Nah, I'm going to say things as I write them. Flix. Oops, spelled Netflix wrong. Spelled it Netflix. Worse.
That's what's the material used to repair fishing nets.
Netflix.
When it becomes damaged.
Yeah, don't search for Netflix with safe search off. It just sounds like some sort of unspeakable act that perverts do to each other, to other
probably
perverts in the dark.
Thailand.
Yeah, those people.
On the fishing boats as they trawl for sea life.
Was it Don't Think Twice?
Don't Think Twice is his newest film. Very, very good. I think Sleepwalk With Me was maybe the next to most recent one. About that's more stand-up comedy.
Here, I underlined it twice.
I only see one underline.
I lied. I'm going to do it again.
There's two lines now.
Thanks for keeping me honest.
I know people can't see it, but I think it's important for the show.
Yeah, I apologize for being dishonest. I'm usually not.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to Josh. He's the one who's really hurt by it.
Oh, Josh, I'm sorry, buddy. Yeah, Josh Heller, another one of the people I'd like to call out for being supportive. Like, it's a bad thing. Like he's going to get in trouble at work. Like, oh, excuse me, Josh, come here. I need to talk to you. I heard you were supportive. Mr. Heller, that's something that we don't particularly condone here at wherever Josh works. But, no, he's... I ended up quitting Beer City when I got a full-time job because I just couldn't... I didn't have the energy to do it anymore, which was difficult. And I ended up sort of doing it on Facebook, just like, oh, yeah, me too, I quit, because someone else had to step back.
Mm.
But, like, it was hard. Like, I thought about it a lot and had to... But there were times before when I was just like, I can't do this. I'm not good at this. I'm not good enough. I'm not, like, fitting in. I can't, blah, blah, blah. And then Josh would say something nice like, hey, you know, it was really hilarious when you did this. Or, hey, we're all learning. Or, I'm glad to have, just something nice. Like, I'm glad you came to the practice today. And so, thank you, Josh. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that also. Let's talk about A Stark and Stormy Night.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm in a book club because I'm the coolest guy in the world.
And Oprah's?
Hmm?
Is it Oprah's?
Oprah's book club? No. No, oh. Not. She's way too cool for us. It's my book club voice. Guys, today we're going to read Water for Elephants. And it's about a circus. And there's guys in a train. But we read a book called... Oh, what was it called? The Postman Only Knocks Once or The Postman Knocks Twice. By a guy who I can't remember. I'm awful with names, as I'm sure you figured out by now. But it was a sort of a crime noir thing where... Like a guy's like, yeah, dames, I'm bad news. And she's like, oh, you're so bad. You want to run away with me? Oh, I couldn't. Let's do it. And, you know, and then they kill somebody. And she's like, oh, I didn't think you'd kill him. And he's like, ah, do it because I'm bad news, doll. Oh, could I want you more? And then they, like, have sex on a stove or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like, the first half of the book was kind of hilarious because I'm like, this guy's trying way too hard to be gritty. But then I'm like, okay, well, this was during the Great Depression where life really was kind of awful. And then it made a little bit more sense. And it was a pretty good book, but it was just ripe for parodying. And that's kind of what Stark and Stormy Knight was a joint effort between me and an actual author friend of mine named Craig Hart. That's CraigHart.com, everybody. Craig Hart, author on Facebook. You're welcome, Craig. You can stop billing me now. But he's like, you know, I wrote like a brief parody of it for the Facebook group. And he's like, do you have any interest in turning this into like a full-length book? It doesn't have to be like a real like full-length. It can be 20,000 words, not novella length. And I'm like, yeah, I think I could probably... And he ended up writing like 3/4 of it. Or, nah, I'm going to give myself some more credit. 2/3 of it, Craig wrote. And I wrote the other bit. And he paid for having it edited and printed. And he paid well, I think I had paid half. For the guy to do the cover art. It was a lot of fun. Of course, it probably sold like 12 copies. I think Josh Heller actually bought one. So yeah, thank you again, Josh.
I bought the ebook.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
I'm a Kindle guy.
Well, thank you too, Chris. Yeah, and I'm certainly not as good an author. I'm like, I can write funny lines, funny dialogue and stuff, but when it comes to having the stamina to pump out like a full-fledged story, like I flag and I give up. Craig, on the other hand, has written multiple books and he's got a series of thrillers that's doing really well, and so he actually knows how to put together a book.
This was a parody of like the film noir.
Yeah, the crime noir genre. What are some of the, you know, the big names in there? I actually looked all this stuff up.
I'd say Sin City would be a pretty modern example of...
Yeah, kind of like that, based on the older works by stuff, you know, authors that I've never read before, but I've seen their influence in the old like 40s gangster movies.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Even older than that, like, and of course James Cagney, the guy who, when everybody thinks of gangsters, like, that's the one who comes up. Yeah, I'm gonna rub you out. See? Oh, really? No, that means I'm gonna kill you. See, I'm gonna daylight you. I looked up all sorts of like crime noir type phrases, and yeah, a gun is a heater. He's packing a heater. Daylighting somebody is putting holes in them to let the daylight in.
Oh.
And how's it? Pasting somebody in the puss is punching them in the mouth.
Oh.
Which is funny on multiple different levels. Pasting. So we ended up having the character call his fist Pasters. And
I like that.
It sounds like somebody's been pasting somebody in here. A pasting just went down. Oh, my pasters were itchy.
The lead character being Stark Raving.
Yep.
A detective.
Of Stark Raving Detective Agency. Who answers the phone? Hello, I'm Stark Raving. And the other character, and the person on the line goes, oh boy, I should probably call somebody else. Throwaway joke. But yeah, it was a lot more fun to write than it was anything that I expected to get any traction. The fact that it sold any at all was pretty fun.
Are you still working on the audiobook version?
I want to say yes, but about the only thing I've made progress, or the only progress that I've made towards that was reading, like, the first chapter aloud to Amanda. In sort of this voice. Think Phil Hartman's Kent, not Kent Brock. Well, he did Kent Brockman too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But... No, what was the other character? Hi, I'm Troy McClure. That one. Troy McClure. So that's the narrator voice that I give Stark Raving in the book. And if I ever do turn it out into an audiobook, I'll probably throw it out. I'll link up on Facebook. And it'll be awesome.
When is the sequel to A Stark and Stormy Knight coming out?
I don't want to jinx it too bad, but Craig and I are working on another project right now. It's another underworld kind of thriller thing. I don't want to go into too much detail. But again, Craig will be doing most of the heavy lifting, and I'll just be the the goofiness consultant, and I'll be adding dialogue, and basically he'll be like, okay, here, I wrote the scene, you want to go ahead and add anything, and I'll go in there and throw some bits in and make this bit funny or whatever. Which,
punch it up? Is that...
Yeah, that's... I'll paste it up.
Paste it up.
Not that Craig needs my help writing funny, but if he's going to do all the other lifting, I might as well at least help out there. And I'm not sure when that's going to come out, but suffice it to, at least I'm working on something else. Like, that's pretty fun. I get to say that. I'm working on a book.
Nice. What is a joke to you?
A subversion of expectation. That's the kind of stuff that I find funny, where it leads up to one thing and suddenly it goes, no, look over there. And you're like, oh, wait, I thought it was going to be this. And it's that. That makes me laugh. Or it could simply be the delivery of a normal story with slightly different pauses, voices, and sound effects. Patton Oswalt telling a story about a squirrel crawling across the power line out in his backyard, and then a bird swooping in and... Oh, I'm sorry, it wasn't a squirrel, it was a rat. Swooping in and grabbing the rat, making this bah noise. It's like he's just telling something that happened while he was watching nature in his backyard, but the delivery and the sound effects is what makes it a joke, what makes it funny. Or did you mean like, two people walk into a bar and there's a loud clang and both of them fall down kind of joke? Because that's...
Oh, because they literally walked into like a metal bar?
Yeah, see? right? Get it? Like they injured themselves?
I thought it might have been like a bell above the door making a clang noise, but...
Nah, no.
That wouldn't explain why they fell down.
Subverted your expectations. I was like, hey, Chris, look over there. And you're like, huh? And I'm like, ah! Joke. Boop.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yeah. Well, sort of like pizza being a sandwich of Italian origin. A hot dog is a sandwich of desperation's origin. Like, ah, we got all this meat that's not really good enough to put anywhere else, but what if we cram it into a sock, like a tube sock, and stick it in a bun? And a bun is basically just a sandwich, and it's a sandwich with a hinge. A hot dog is a sandwich with a hinge. And that hinge breaks, like if you put the mustard in before the hot dog, which is what I used to do.
Yeah, oh.
I thought I was clever. Put it down there so it doesn't fall off or slide off or, you know, get on my face when I try to bite into it. I'll just put it down there, and the hot dog will plug up the top, and it'll be like one food package.
Little did you know, yeah, you were compromising the structural integrity of the bun itself.
Yeah, sog up the hinge, though, and then the dog just falls through on the bottom, and it gets on your pants. And then the people in church ask you to leave. How do you get a hot dog in there anyway?
Denomination would...
What kind of what denomination would ask a child of a mid-30s child to leave their service because he dropped a hot dog on his pants?
Yeah, that's not very...
A heartless one, that's what.
You can tell me off air so I can
avoid. Yeah, I was going to say
pass judgment, but avoid maybe also.
Well, yeah, I suppose avoiding is a passing of judgment, right? You know, like, I'm going to avoid that person. Doesn't mean you're not judging. It means you've made your judgment and now you're acting on it. So yeah, evangelicals.
Oh.
Whoops. Yeah, let that cat out of the bag.
I'll edit that out. What the hell is a rotary engine?
It's if you listen to have you ever watched Jay Leno's Garage?
I have not.
He's like he's got a lot of money and he spends a lot of it on very expensive cars.
Yes.
And he's got, I think right there on his website, you can watch him just like, okay, this here's a car that goes, it does like this and it's really fast. However he talks. Can't do a Jay Leno voice.
That was close.
That was my best Jay Leno impression. But he calls it a Wankel engine. Now, this has got a Wankel engine, but it's Wankel. It's a German name, Felix Wankel. I'm not sure what fever dream made him decide to, you know, try to come up with a different way of doing an internal combustion engine. It's like, I don't know, maybe reciprocating pistons bothered him. He's like, these reciprocating pistons are... No, it's not a German accent. Dang it. No, I had it like a second ago. But yeah, the... Like, these pistons bother him. And he's like, okay, so how can I take the four cycles of an internal combustion of a, like a Atkins cycle engine or a whatever the other cycle is, the four-stroke engine. I'm not helping it. Let me back up. It's as if you took the combustion chamber is shaped like sort of a fat figure eight, and flying around inside this and squeezing up to the walls of this eight is like a pudgy triangle. And like a GIF or JIF, that's a war I don't want to get into.
GIF.
Would be GIF? Okay.
GIF is a peanut people butter. Who are trolling. Yeah. They know what the right answer is, and they're just playing the fool, I think.
Yeah, they're being troublesome.
They're pretending to be, I don't know if obstinate is the right word. But
they're contrarians.
Yeah.
Which, as a Windows Phone owner, I understand completely. Like, I didn't own it because... Actually, you know what? I owned it because a lot I like the UI. And then later on, when the app gap became a problem, it was like an excuse for me not to have to participate in a lot of social trends, Snapchat, and the like, because there was no app for that phone. I could just shrug and go, all right, Windows Phone, sorry, can't. Got me out of a lot of stuff. But yeah.
Now you're in it? Are you on it?
I have an Android phone, but I do not have Snapchat on there.
Yet.
Nah, you're going to ask me to... Man,
it's got a filter that puts dog ears and a dog nose and a dog tongue on your face. It's pretty amazing.
I'm not going to lie. I'm impressed with, like, the AR, the altered... Yeah. What is it? Augmented reality.
Yes.
That Snapchat can do. I'm like, okay, that's actually impressive that they managed to do that.
Yeah, when they do a thing, like when you first turn on a filter where it like maps points on your face, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, anyone who has a photo of you has like a permanently identifiable fingerprint of anything you show up in a recording ever. Yeah.
Which is a little creepy.
Yeah.
And I assume that job has fallen to an AI over there in mm-hmm. Snapchat Mountain or wherever they're headquartered, whatever hollowed out volcano they live in. So yeah, a Wankel rotary piston engine is, instead of pistons that go up and down, it's got like a pudgy triangle that flies around inside a sort of a pudgy figure eight. And every time it closes in on one of the walls that squeezes the air, that's the compression stroke. And there's spark plugs. There's a couple of them in there. And there are three points around the figure eight that are compression zones, I guess. So one gets compressed and then gets ignited. That's the power shot or the power stroke. And then it gets compressed again to spit out the exhaust. And then I think there's like a... Is there another compression one? Yeah, I'd have to see the GIF. But, yeah, so instead of up and down motion getting transferred into rotary motion, it's already rotary. So the thing, at least in the RX-8, the car I've got, it revs up to about 9,000 RPM without exploding. So,
which, that's a lot of RPMs.
Yeah, Honda can do that with small four cylinders too, so I guess it's not that impressive, but it's still kind of fun. And I value it because I'm a contrarian. People ask, how many cylinders has it got? Well, actually, it's got two, and it's only a 1.3 liter, but it counts as sort of like a 2.6. Where are you going? You know, nobody gives a crap.
So your first Mazda?
Yep. It was like my dream car. When my grandmother died about 10 years ago, she left my brothers and I some money, And I was like, okay, I could responsibly put this away towards college or, you know, invest it or something like that. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to have my midlife crisis now while I'm young enough to enjoy it. And I went out and bought a sports car. A used one, of course, because she didn't give me $30,000. But so thank you, Grandma, for allowing me to do that. I never would have been able to have such a... And that, sometimes I still can't believe I've got one of these things. Like, I'm just some doofus. Why do I have a sports car? Which, you know, it's not an expensive sports car. And when I bought it used, the guy who owned it was moving back to Japan, so I got it for pretty cheap. He's like, I don't care, just get it off my hands.
They look really sharp.
Yeah, was it? Not Motor Week. The British car show. It's got the Stig in it. Does the... Jeremy somebody is the host.
Oh, the one that's grand touring on Netflix, yeah, or Amazon now?
I think so, yeah. Why can't I remember the name of that? I'm going to call it Snarky Car Guys Do a Car Show. And the guy talking about the Mazda said, it looks like it was designed by committee. When some folks are like, we'd like a coupe. And the other folks are like, no, we'd like a sedan. And so they try to compromise. And this is what you end up with. A car that's technically four doors, but it's got little fiddly bits here and a lumpy bit here. And
Top Gear?
Top Gear, that's it. Yeah. The Stig. I wish I had a name like that. Where people are just like, oh, here comes the Geech. Or...
That's one of your bucket list goals?
Yeah, kind of. Right. I'd like a, you know, like Prince or the Stig or the Edge. I'd like somebody, I'd like to get famous enough so that I get a mono name like that with a "the" in front of it. Like, I'm the only one. I'm the only Geech.
That would be nice. What does it mean to be a comedian?
Mostly, to me, it means being willing to be incredibly scared, because if your stuff doesn't go over well, and it doesn't matter that they're not actually judging you, like, they're not saying, oh, your act was garbage, therefore you're garbage. Most people just go, I didn't think that was all that funny, and they don't think about it at all. But at least to me, the scary part is I got to put myself out there. I have to suck it up and say, it doesn't matter if this goes over well or not, I'm going to try because I think this thing is funny, or I think this might make some people laugh. So it's kind of a leap of faith in that regard. Like, you're making yourself vulnerable, which is, you know, something I've spent 34 years of my life avoiding. And all of a sudden you got to go out there and do it, like, in the end, and you have to make it look like you want to be vulnerable, and you have to make it look like you're doing this on purpose, and you still have to be funny.
What is your motivation for performing comedy?
Well, beyond self-improvement, I guess. It's like I never thought I would be able to do it. And still, like, the fact that you've invited me to be on the show now is, it's still sort of like mind-boggling to me, because I'm like, I'm just some dude. Like, I don't think I'm particularly good at anything, really.
Oh.
But, like...
I beg to differ.
Yeah, see? And that's what I'm talking about. This, like, very uplifting, supportive kind of, like, no. I like the thing you do, or whatever. And, you know, someone like me is like, ooh, really? Like, wow, holy crap. Like, I think it'd be great to let something go to my head, but I'm too self-deprecating for that to happen. So, maybe someday. Maybe once I'm the Geech, then then I'll let my skills go to my head. But until then... Like, I still sort of feel like this is sort of a hobby. Like, I'll never be good enough at it to make it anything other than a hobby, so why kid myself? But the fact that when it goes over well, it's this amazing shot of adrenaline, this amazing feeling when people say, hey, great show. Wow, really? People are telling me I did a great show? It's fun when someone at work says, hey, great job fixing this thing that you fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Getting positive feedback from your boss on that is very nice. But when an audience member who paid to come in says, great show, or you guys were really good, or I thought your bit there was really funny, there's really nothing comparable to that that I found.
Hmm.
That kind of, like, wow, I put myself out there and it worked. I still can't believe I'm trying to, you know, stand up in front of people and be funny.
Yeah. What is the best gift that you have ever received?
Let's see. To be sentimental, probably my 34th birthday party, where Amanda got a bunch of people together, some of our friends that she brought in when, you know, when her and I got together. So they're my friends now, but, you know, they're still sort of like, oh, they're her friends because she brought them. She got a bunch of them together. A bunch of the improv folks all showed up. More people than I'd ever had at a party for me ever. Most people I'd ever seen in that house. And they all came to wish me a happy birthday. And that's probably the best gift ever.
Thank you.
Well, second to that would probably be the Power Wheels car I got when I was 5. Because that was a hell of a lot of fun.
What is the best gift that you have ever given?
I'm not really... Let's see, other maybe possibly the trip to last Christmas. I got some friends, April and Jeremy, who've come to a lot of my... They were at my informants at...
What?
In the improv class at Civic, like the last class, you're the last hour or so, you're invited. You can invite family and friends to watch a sort of an informal performance, informance.
Okay, it sounded like some sort of religious thing.
Well, aside from having to wear all the white robes and all those candles Bart lit, yeah, it was mostly secular. Oh, the tattoo still hurts, though. Anyway, moving on. But I got them and Amanda and me all tickets to go see a Penguins versus Red Wings game at the Joe before they shut down the Joe and it moved everything over to Little Caesars Plaza or whatever they're calling it now. And that was it was like something I did made a bunch of people happy. I don't know. It's like I have a hard time trying to think of, because what if I'm wrong? You know, if I'm like, oh, that gift I gave so-and-so made their life so much better, and they contact me later, they're like, yeah, actually, I threw that away on the way home. Like, I didn't even really like it.
That would be a pretty shocking phone call to receive.
Most of my friends, actually all of my friends, none of them would be that mean. Like, hey, Paul, you know those cinnamon roll pants that you thought would change my life? They didn't really. I know you thought they were fantastic, as evidenced by the bite out of them, but they're not. Yeah, I threw them away.
If a deli was going to name a sandwich after you, what would the name of the sandwich be, and what would it be made out of?
Let's see. I would probably, we'll call it the Nerve Sweats, and it would be, so it would have ham, and just a lot of ham. Just like a bunch of ham and like one green pepper. Like, and if the sandwich would come cut in half, then the green pepper would have to be on one side or the other. Because you're like, oh, what? Why is the green pepper? And the other half didn't have it. What the heck? It would just be a confusing sandwich, but it would still somehow taste good.
What kind of bread?
cheese. What's that? Ciabatta bread? It would have that, except there would be like cheese on it. And
like baked onto the bread?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And okay. One side would have like four poppy seeds on it.
All right. Who are some of your role models?
Probably my grandfather, who I guess my dad and mom in different ways, but and my dad exhibits some of these tendencies too, so that's, I guess that's, but they came from his father, imparted to him, I believe, who was said to have been able to explain anything to anybody without making that person feel stupid. Which as an IT type person, like, I strive to do that, because somebody who doesn't know how to click there and point there is not stupid. They just spent their time doing other things. Like, I don't think I'm good at computers and stuff because I spent the time, fighting them. I don't think that gives me some sort of skill, or it just means that I spent my time that I could have been doing other things doing that. So that, and the ability to talk to anybody, my grandfather could do that. He could find something in common with everybody. He could make them feel like, he actually gave a crap. And to me, that is a skill that I hope I exhibit. And if I don't, I'm working towards exhibiting it. So, role model in that way, yes. Let's see, who else? Like, maybe a comedian-type role model? I like Brian Regan's insistence on being relatively clean, which I don't think being clean is in and of itself a good thing. Like, if you say hell, fuck, damn, shit, poop.
Whoa.
I don't know if you can say, can we say those?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. But
fuck, sorry,
but fuck, but being forced to avoid it kind of makes you think around corners. It kind of makes you think a little bit harder, like, how can I get this across? Yeah, it would, some of the jokes actually might have been funnier if he put a swear in there or something like that. But the fact that he didn't and still worked around it, like, I think that's pretty funny. I mean, that's pretty admirable.
Yeah.
Even to somebody like me, who, I don't mind if people swear at all. My upbringing was one of, you're supposed to be shocked and put your hand over your mouth and find a fainting couch if somebody says buttocks.
Oh.
You say bottom. Nobody says butt or booty, heaven forbid.
Oh my.
Did you say booty? Well, it's off to your room with you. Get your bottom into your room. So I kind of admire people who give themselves sort of self-imposed hurdles to jump over.
Hmm.
It's like, you don't really have to do that, but he did it anyway. And
thank you. What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
Wolfgang's and cinnamon rolls at Wolfgang's.
Wolfgang's in Easttown or Wolfgang Puck's in the Amway Grand?
Oh, Wolfgang's in Easttown.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, is it related? Wolfgang and the Wolfgang Puck people? I wonder if there's
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I've never been to the Pucky one. But it's like, now I just do it to bother her, but Amanda will ask, like, hey, where do you want to go out to eat tonight or this morning or whenever? And I always say Wolfgang's, and they close at like 2:30 or something like that, because they're mostly breakfast place, and it's like 8 o'clock. I'm like, Wolfgang's. She's like, you know they're closed. I'm like, you didn't ask. Like, if it was someplace feasible. Like, I just want to go to Wolfgang's.
Technically correct is the best kind of correct, right?
It's the most infuriating kind of correct.
But not for you.
Well, not on the dealing end of it, I suppose. I get to kind of chuckle like I've just pulled off some sort of hilarious caper. Meanwhile, dodging punches. Think I'll be all smug about it. But yeah, I love breakfast food. So omelets and scrambles, which I think are sort of like the lazy person's omelet. Like, I'm going to put all this stuff together, but I ain't folding it over. And pancakes and waffles and French toast and all that kind of stuff. Like,
well, Eggs Benedict?
Yeah, even the all sorts of Benedicts. Can you have like a non-egg? Because that's the hollandaise sauce has egg in it, right? That's what makes it a Benedict.
I don't know.
Or is it the betrayal? Yes. History joke.
Benedict Arnold?
Yeah, he was called that because he had hollandaise sauce on him all the time.
Oh.
So it made him so slippery.
Hmm.
The more you know.
Do-do-do-do. Could you ring the triangle, please? Oop. It's better if you do the middle side.
This one here?
No, the one, but yeah.
Oop. Oh, I'm going to try that again.
Oh, boy. Let's do the whole the more you know thing to set it up.
Okay.
The more you know. Do-do-do-do.
Yeah, that one was better.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
It's like, part of me wants to just say the adulation. Like, people thinking that I did something worth clapping for. But more than that, it's knowing that I did it. That I, because like days before these things, I wouldn't say that I don't look forward to them, but I just kind of dread them. Because I'm like, I get nervous. I'm like, oh, this is coming up. I gotta do this thing. It's coming up, and I'm so afraid that I'm gonna blow it and ruin it. Especially with improv, where if it's like I blow a scene, then it's two of us up there not getting laughs, and I feel like I did something bad to somebody else. But then when I finally get out there and push past the anxiety and the voice in my head that says, it's gonna suck, you're gonna do terrible, why are you even bothering this? You know, and then just going, you know what, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. Getting out there, doing it, and having people laugh and clap, and going, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. And I don't know, maybe that never goes away. Maybe that's true for a lot of people, because some folks don't seem nervous. Some who have been doing it for years are still nervous before shows. And I was told once by somebody wiser than me, which would be most people who say things like this to me, that just means you actually care about delivering a decent performance. Like if you weren't nervous, like, who cares, whatever, if I bomb, whatever, I'll just get to go home and eat Netflix, eat waffles and watch Netflix.
There's a quote supposedly from some ancient Chinese philosopher that if you're feeling depression, you're living in the past. If you're feeling anxiety, you're living in the future. And if you're feeling happiness, you're living in the present. Or maybe it's just a matter of thinking less about what's going to happen in the future and just going with the flow.
Yeah. I mean, I usually when I see stuff like that, like fortune cookie wisdom, I'm because I'm curmudgeonly and terrible like that. But no, I can actually see that because, yeah, being anxious about the future, when you're doing comedy, when you're on stage, you don't really have time to think about the future. You don't have the time to be anxious. It's just there's no room for it. If you stop and be anxious, that's dead air. That's unless you're doing something to fill that. Like, yeah, it kind of forces. Okay, yeah, that's one of the bingo. That's one of the things I like about comedy is it forces me to stop worrying so much. I just don't have the time to do it, so I don't do it.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
Laughing. And let's see how to make that sound smarter. Laughing and learning. Okay, smarter than that. Deconstructing jokes, kind of thinking about what makes the thing funny. And that's something that happens after you laugh. the kind of things, the kind of laughter I like the most is when I laugh and then go, wait, what? Like, nobody says that. Nobody talks like that. I'll try to think of an example of, Brian Regan does that a bit, where, when someone says, hey, have a nice meal, and you say, you too, to a waiter. You know, it's one of those dumb things that everybody says every now and then, but he turns it into this, like, 3-minute bit. Oh, you don't have a meal, do you? I'm a doofus. Like, it's funny because nobody actually says that. They think it, but nobody says it out loud like that. And that's why it's funny to me.
The final question of the first portion of the show, before we take a short break. If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
None of that stuff is as big a deal as you think it is. And I know I wouldn't believe my 34-year-old self because I heard my father say stuff like that to me too, and I didn't believe him then. But now, yeah, it would be bad things happening. Oh my God, it's the end of the world. I'll never survive this. It'll never be the same again. You know, and now that I'm 34, I'm like, yeah, it was the same. It was fine. I was upset for a week. Kind of goes the same way. Oh my God, I'm so excited about this new album. Ah, I can't believe it. They're the best. And now it's sort of like, oh, fun. I can't wait to get that. And then rip it and encode it to MP3 and FLAC. Because I still do that.
You're a lossless guy?
Yep. When it comes to my music at home. Optical out, straight from the sound card into the back of the receiver.
Nice. Well, I haven't had time yet to set up a transition into the break. So if you wouldn't mind, please doing some sort of performance, musical or otherwise, and then ring the bell when you're done so I know to stop it, please.
Okay, I will sing. I'll sing a Tom Waits song. Ooh, there was a guy who had people to his house. He'd have them talk about comedy and what it's like to be a louse. Sometimes the people would say funny things, and sometimes they'd be forced to sing. But always the people would leave pretty happy, and then folks would listen to the things they'd said. Tom Waits' song.